This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Welcome to the Range Podcast. I'm Ricky Brule, and with me is Jake Hollywood Iverson. Join us at the Archery Range, where we'll tell stories from the hunt, discuss technical bow shooting tactics and gear, and pick the brains of some of the most successful people to ever shoot a bow. Whether you're about to shoot that X for the win or send an arrow at a trophy buck, this podcast is for you. The Range Podcast is brought to you by Vapor Trail Archery, makers of the best bowstrings money can buy, originators of limb-driven arrow rest technology, and innovators of stokerized stabilizer systems. Welcome to The Range, everybody. I'm your host, Ricky Brule, and hope you all are having a fantastic day. If you would like to watch the video version of this episode, you can head over to our Vapor Trail YouTube channel. Make sure while you're there, you give us a like, subscribe, and then hit that bell so you can be up to date on all things archery. Sorry, brain fart. And if you are listening, make sure you give us a rating and a review. Only 5 stars will do. So today I am lucky enough to have a longtime Vapor Trail patron. And we've been trying to get him on for a while, and not so much him being too busy, but me just being inundated and overwhelmed with all kinds of things, and yeah. Basically just
pulling in whatever podcasts I can really quickly pull out of my back pocket as quickly as I can. And so this one was a little bit more, well, I think I reached out to you last week and we made it work this week. So yeah. I think it worked out okay.
Yep. Able to pivot quickly.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it never happens.
Right. Right. And I appreciate it too, because I just love having the conversations in person more.
Yeah.
And especially if it creates that opportunity, right? Because sometimes you don't have the opportunity to meet someone in person and you're close enough. Mm-hmm. It is a little bit of a drive for you coming from Alexandria. But ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dan Gates, how are you, brother?
Fantastic. It was a good day for a drive, so that it worked out really well.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm doing real well. Anytime that I can spend some time to chat about archery outside my four walls of my home is great, because otherwise it's so pressing to have to sit and talk technical or coaching and all that stuff with my wife.
Right.
I can just see her eyes glass over and she's like, no, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, my wife, the same, absolutely the same. It's just like, okay. I haven't really announced this yet. So I guess this is when the people on the podcast are gonna hear this first, but I drew my North Dakota tag again for the Any Deer 2 years in a row, which is unheard of, right? Like, I only applied for the point, never thought I would get it in a million years, right? And so my plan was I was going to bear hunt in the Boundary Waters. I knew I was going to draw that tag. And so I was telling my wife about it, you know, pretty excited.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, kind of like, you know, there's something about having to make that pivot, right? And then I'm like feeling a little uneasy about that. You know what I mean? I didn't really have it in the budget to do that, but then I'm just kind of like, okay, we can pivot. We can make this work. But she was just like, I'm really sorry that I can't express the same enthusiasm,
right?
You know, because for her, she's just like, yeah, so what? You paid money for a tag and you got it. What is that?
Yeah.
You know? So then I'm like, well, honey, what you don't understand is, you know,
congratulations, but wait, how does that apply?
Yeah.
What does my fall now look like because of your fall looking like this?
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's just the way it is. It's fine. I there's part of the separation that's good too.
Yeah. So how hard is it to get North Dakota?
Right now, I know people that had 4 points that didn't draw. So,
well, and I heard in the previous podcast, the man with the most points in the entire world for North Dakota, I don't remember who the gentleman was you were talking about, but it made me wonder about drawing North Dakota, because I lived in Fargo-Moorhead for the longest time, for about 10 years before I moved back to Alexandria. I've always been a central Minnesota guy. After college, moved up there for my career, did a lot in Fargo-Moorhead. Have a ton of friends that hunt and have always hunted either archery and or rifle in North Dakota. And I don't remember anybody ever talking about how hard it was to hunt in North Dakota or to draw a non-resident tag for North Dakota. So to me, it's almost a little bit foreign. And obviously the times change, states change for non-residents, as we've seen the last couple of years. But I don't remember it ever being like a complicated process. But if you put in 1 point and you get drawn, fantastic. I mean, that's the dream, right?
Right.
It's easy to plan that way.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just progressively gotten harder and harder. You know, I mean, there's a lot of factors involved. You know, there's been some winter kill, that definitely brings the numbers down. The oil boom over there had a big effect on it. Cause I started the first year I hunted there, I think was in, 07. I went out in 06 with my buddy who was a tag holder, but basically the way that it worked then is you just had to apply before, I think it was like February, like the second week in February or something like that. And as long as you did that, pretty much guaranteed a tag every time.
Yeah.
I never didn't draw or get that tag. And then I would say it was probably closer to, I'm trying to think, the first year I went to South Dakota, that was probably in 2013. And part of the reason why I did that is because now it was getting more and more difficult to draw tags in North Dakota because of the winter kill and because of the oil boom and all that stuff, the pipelines and everything were going in right where we were hunting. And there was a lot of bad stuff going on too. Like, I didn't see it personally, but I heard stories of some of the pipe layers and stuff like that, poaching deer and doing a lot of stuff like that. And
it affects the entire ecosystem.
Right.
Like, we don't have to get into like the political side of putting in pipelines, but it really does disrupt. That's probably the best way to describe it, is it's going to disrupt the landscape of everything over there.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that was a big part of it. And so I started going, went to South Dakota for a few years. And as I was going there, I was still applying for North Dakota.
Yep.
But again, now we're at, once you get above 4 points, it exponentially, like, it's almost impossible not to draw. Like, yeah. It was, I thought it was before, but really the way they've set it up is once you hit that 4 points, they've got a multiplier that pretty much makes it impossible for you to not draw.
Right.
And who knows? I mean, they can change that, you know,
and it's a 1 point per year. Yeah. You can purchase the 1 point per year, just like everybody.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so, and it, one thing that I like, one change they made that I like is before you would, way back in the day, you would actually have to write a check and mail it in.
Yep.
And if you didn't draw the tag, they'd mail the check back.
They'd send the check back.
Yeah.
Nothing like holding your check.
Right. Forever. And then in the last few years, what they do is then they take your money right away, you know, online. And then if you didn't draw, then they refund your money.
Yep.
Now you don't get charged unless you draw.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice. Yep. I mean, it wasn't a big deal for me because I don't know. I've got a credit card specific for that stuff.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So
everybody puts it on the card that gets the points or whatever it is. And if it gets pulled, it gets pulled. And usually they're 40-ish bucks or something like that to buy a point. Or sometimes it's 100 bucks.
Yeah.
It varies by state, I guess. But
yeah, well, North Dakota, really, it doesn't cost you anything to get a point.
Oh, really? So it's just... Sorry.
For now I'm second guessing it. I might have to think about that some more. That may have changed.
Uh-oh.
Because back when they used to refund your money fully, there was no points.
Mm-hmm.
It was all just strictly luck.
Just for draw.
And so now when I look at the statistics from last year, I didn't realize the chances were as good as they are to draw with 0 points, but it's right around that 10% mark.
Yeah.
So the chances, I guess, are better than I anticipated, but still out of 10% of roughly 1,200 applicants that had 0 points.
Yep.
So, but in any case, I drew the tag, super excited about that. There's a couple other people I know that drew it. I won't spoil it for them because I know they probably want to tell people on their own time.
Yep.
But in any case, before we get too far, let's talk a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and then on top of whatever you want to talk about. And then also let's get into your origin story as far as like hunting goes, what got you into shooting a bow, and then what eventually led to you becoming the head archery coach for Legends Archery at Alexandria College.
Yeah. I don't know if I really have too interesting of an origin story. I'm no Wolverine by any means. Like, they're not putting me in any Marvel movies. Although my kids like to compare me to Hawkeye because he shoots a bow in the Marvel movies.
Yeah, there you go. Of course.
And when I don't wear a hat, I have blonde spiky hair that's receding like crazy right now. So from an origin standpoint, I started bow hunting with my dad. And I think it was probably about that 12, 13.
Yeah.
My whole childhood, my dad always bow hunted. Mm-hmm. My dad was law enforcement. So he had always had, archery as kind of his zen, his piece.
Yeah.
You know, and I suppose it relates a little bit, right? You go from firearms to, you know, and being around criminals and law and whatever to the solitude of archery hunting. And he really kind of instilled that into me. And I'd always watch him go every year. I mean, we're here in central Minnesota. There's a lot of public land. We got to hunt private land. So I'd go with him and sit in a tree stand. And then I'd watch him every year. He'd go to Camp Ripley and hunt the Camp Ripley military base archery hunt. And that was when it was a draw system. They've changed it now the last couple of years, as I'm sure you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But it was similar for a local Minnesota hunt. It was a draw. So there was excitement to it. And I'd always watch him, and he'd always load up a camper with a couple buddies of his that he grew up with, and they'd go hunting. And so when you watch that, that's kind of that mentorship that you look at, and you're like, wow, I really kind of, you know, I revere this. You know, I kind of want that for myself as well. So as I started getting older, it was like, well, I'm going to tag along and start going with and that kind of thing. And so I started bow hunting about that 12, 13, and I was shooting a bow prior to, but I remember when I was 13, I went to do my first archery hunt at Camp Ripley, and it was all this excitement because they don't let you in until a certain time, right? Like the gates open and you've got two parallel lines of vehicles and you got 2,000 hunters that are all rushing into 53,000 acres of public land, pristine public land for that matter too, because the only thing they've got is military stuff.
Right.
So that's kind of where bow hunting came into play for me, is that's through cool. my dad. Yeah, it was like I couldn't have asked for a better chance encounter with bow hunting. It was just being able to kind of mimic what my dad was doing.
Yeah.
And then from there, archery kind of, it took a little bit of a backseat through the, you know, high school career. Sure, I'd be done with sports or I'd be done with school and I'd rush out to the deer stand early season because you still got plenty of light.
Yeah.
You're not worrying about desensitizing or eliminating any scent off your clothing, mm-hmm. right? It's all in the trunk of my beater car that I had as a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Rush to the deer stand. So a lot of that. And I didn't really, like, I can't remember harvesting a deer with my bow. And I primarily did bow. I did do gun hunting with a 12 gauge growing up a few times during shotgun season.
Yeah.
But I primarily stuck to bow hunting because it was so much more elasticity. You had all the way from September, right around the time of my birthday. So dad always got me bow hunting stuff
yeah.
for all my birthdays. So nice. That kind of helped set the tone for the season. And then you got till December 31st in Minnesota. So, mm-hmm. Stuck to bow hunting primarily. And then end of high school, college, kind of took a little bit of a backseat, shot a lot of kind of recreationally in the backyard, hunt whenever I could.
Yeah.
And then after college, when I started my career, I found a local archery club. My wife was awesome, gave me one of the best gifts ever, was a membership to Sand Hills Archery in Fargo.
Yeah.
And that's when you kind of, that's more than just backyard shooters.
Yeah.
They had a right. small 3D course. They mm-hmm. had an indoor range. So that kind of led into this whole target archery type shooting as well, more mm-hmm. than just, you know, concentrating on harvesting an animal.
Right.
So that's when it really turned into, well, I want to be a better shooter because I want to hit that X, or I want to hit that 12 ring or 11 ring on a 3D target. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to walk into a range and have people turn their heads and be like, wow, that guy's shooting really good. Or he's, you know, he's knocking arrows or, you know, whatever it is. So mm-hmm. that starts to kind of spiral. So you're like, well, I got to get better. Mm-hmm. So I did that. After college in my 20s, 30s, and I'm the ripe age of 40 years old right now. And just from then young. Until now, yeah, maybe young. I don't know. Some people don't say that.
Halftime.
Totally is, yeah. In my big body, I'm still agile enough to do it all. And I can still recover if I get injured or hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
But so that time period was like this building time for me as a archer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it really, there was so much in there, but being introduced to 3D archery, I think, is probably what really was like, oh man, like this is way better than waiting until September and go sit in a deer stand and brag to all my friends about bow hunting. Mm-hmm. This is now something that I'm shooting at the cavity of an animal and I'm allowing myself to familiarize with where I want to hit. That golden triangle now is three-dimensional mm-hmm. and it's all kinds of different animals. And I just had a blast with it. So, you know, thank God that I was introduced to 3D archery by my cousin, Eric, that he now works in the archery industry and he's an archery nut. My uncle's an archery nut. My dad was. And I've got so many friends in my network now that are. Mm-hmm. And that's what led me to coaching, is the network yeah. that you build, right?
Right.
And so I've got friends that I hunt with now in Alexandria, now that we moved back to Alexandria. And they knew that by this time now, let's say, I suppose 2017, 2018, by that time I had dove so far into archery mm-hmm. that I built a bow shop in my basement. I've got new bows that I'm buying because I just want to try them. Mm-hmm. You know, buy a used bow here, sell it. Get a different used bow or, you know, whatever it might
yeah.
be. Get equipment and just start tinkering and playing. Mm-hmm. So it got very technical. And with that network of friends that I created, one of them had known that I was really kind of deep diving and loved to give pointers, and neighbors and friends would come over and shoot in the backyard and they'd bring their kids. And one of them, he had said, hey, my kids are in 4-H. Would you ever be interested in coaching 4-H? And I was... Yeah, I don't know. Like that was, I was a little torn on that. I'm like, you know, I don't know much about 4-H. I know mm-hmm. in high school I made fun of their livestock kids.
Yeah.
A lot. Like I made fun of 4-H people. I don't know if I would fit in with that. Mm-hmm. Well, turns out they have a big shooting sports program.
Yeah.
And Minnesota is really rich with the shooting sports side of it. Mm-hmm. Alexandria also hosted the state shoot for 4-H.
Okay.
So being that it's right there in my backyard, all this shooting sports stuff is happening right in Alexandria. We had a program that had an instructor that was, she was retiring out of coaching. I got into it at the 4-H level, got certified with 4-H so that I could coach archery. Really took a hold of that, I would say almost immediately, with trying to help some of these kids and instill some of the things that were passed to me from my dad of be an ethical shooter, be an ethical bow hunter, and do whatever you can to make a good shot on an animal. In 4-H, that was directly applicable.
Right.
Because a lot of the 4-H kids that you think about, they grew up on farms or they grew up in small communities. And if they're shooting a bow or they're shooting trap or 22 muzzleloader, all these different disciplines that they have in 4-H, they're doing it because more than likely they're going to turn into a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. I mean, what a good segue to try to instill that. Hey, I'm gonna try to teach you a little bit better way to shoot your bow. Or, you know, the trap instructors are, hey, if you're going to be goose and duck hunting, pheasant hunting, whatever, let's take this trap thing serious. Let's get proficient with the shotgun, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what really, that's kind of the big broad. I know I've rambled for quite some time, but that's kind of the big broad picture of like my origin all the way to how coaching started.
Mm-hmm.
And archery for the college came more recently. So from the time of being a coach for archery for 4-H, seeing with some of these kids that they were really progressing well. They're shooting really well. They're sending me pictures of the fall of the game they've taken.
Mm.
And some of them are like, hey, I mean, I did great. I did exactly what we talked about with this. I made sure my grip was good. I made sure my anchor was good. You know, all these little things that you talk about week after week after week of coaching 4-H kids.
Right.
And then now they're saying, hey, here's how I applied it when I was hunting as well. So that was really cool. And, you know, it's validating to be like, all right, this is the right thing. So I moved on then and I reached out to some of the Minnesota coaches that I know of. Rob over at Elk River Sportsman's Club, Rob Knutson. He's coaching with Archery Performance Academy, and Paul and Jason and Linda Beck is a level 5 archery coach, I believe, with USA Archery.
Yeah.
So I started putting some feelers out, like, you know, is it best if I want to continue this passion of coaching along with me doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it best to reach out to them and try to go into another type of certification? And that's where I was led to USA Archery.
Okay.
So when I got my USA Archery, it was mainly, well, maybe I can start a JOAD program in Alexandria because we have all this other stuff going on with 4-H and some of these other NAS programs, and they're trying to spin up S3DA and all these things that really are close to making archery a lot bigger in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So did the USA Archery path. I was able to get my level 2 and then now my level 3 coaching certification. And when the college, Alexandria College, started an athletics program, I went to college there in 2003 to 2005 for IT. That's what my day job is. I'm an IT operations manager for a software company.
Okay.
And went to college at Alec Tech. And in my network, one of my really good friends, one of my brothers in the industry, partners, whatever you want to call them, not that kind of partner, but just a archery mentor and good buddy. He's big in the archery space. His name is Tyler. He owns or is one of the owners of the Alexandria Shooting Park and Lakes Area Arms, which is now an archery shop, rifle shop, shotgun shop.
Mm-hmm.
So he had reached out to me and said, hey, the college pinged me through the chamber in Alexandria and said, hey, we're thinking about introducing another shooting sports program. They already have trap, they have bass fishing, they have esports, they have all these different athletics that are offered there outside of just like, we've also got baseball, volleyball, soccer.
Right.
We've got a wide variety of sports. And they thought, well, could we do something like with archery? And they knew Tyler was a big archery buff like myself. And so he was like, hey, they want to do this, but if they're going to do it, they need a USA Archery certified coach. And I'm like, well, hey, raise my hand. I'm that. Mm-hmm. So we had a lunch with the college. College loved it. They gave Tyler and I the keys to the kingdom, kind of, and said, hey, build us an archery program. We want to be able to offer this. And, you know, it's tell us how we can mimic another college and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And found out that nobody else in Minnesota was doing it. So it,
right.
it fit perfect
because mm-hmm.
archery is huge in Minnesota.
Yeah.
It's and it's doing nothing but getting bigger.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. So
that's kind of womb to tomb, like they call it in manufacturing. Yeah. A little bit. But yeah, that's it's been a heck of a journey, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of work, but now we're kind of in starting year two of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really cool. I've always wanted to or thought about diving into the coaching mm-hmm. thing. I mean, for me, I'm a hyper hobbied individual, right? So yeah. like to a degree where it's been a sticking point in many of my past relationships where yeah. it's like, okay, all right, I got to pump the brakes here. Yep. All right. I got to pick something and then
yeah.
go that direction. Right. So,
absolutely.
But in any case, and you know, once I hit, you know, I guess I would say you could consider me to be an adult onset archery mm-hmm. hunter. I mean, I had a bow when I was 16, but I shot a rabbit in my backyard and it was a traumatic experience. And
yeah. there's blood.
Yeah.
And they didn't die instantly.
Yeah. It was
kicking.
It's my dad used to, him and my uncle would give me such a hard time about that. But in any case, so yeah, when I went to college, I was in Duluth. And I really wanted to do something. I started shooting at Chalstrom's. I was shooting three mm-hmm. or I was shooting five spot then. But then the first time I discovered 3D, I was just like you. Yeah. I was like, oh, this might be my calling. Like yeah. this might be where I'm at, because really my passion was to hunt, mm-hmm. but this is to me the best way to prepare for that hunt. And then absolutely. At the same time, just like, so when I was in Duluth for a while, then I moved down to Arizona for a while. I hunted a couple of times when I was down there for javelinas. Then I was up in Fargo for a little mm-hmm. bit. And then I moved to the Minneapolis area and I started shooting. I got a membership at a place called Wolf Track. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was one of the first ranges where it was like you had 24/7 access. So they yep. gave you a key. You could go in anytime.
Yes.
Everything yep. was on an honor system. You could go in there and make yourself a pizza or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we were all working, me and a bunch of guys were working for Sportsman's Warehouse. And so we'd get done with our shift and then we'd go over to, there's a bar and grill over there called the Old Piper Inn. So we'd go there and we'd grab a bite to eat,
mm-hmm.
you know, then go over shoot for a little while, then go back, maybe have a couple beers. And so that's kind of what inspired this podcast, is just all the conversations.
Yeah.
And we have these, we're all these like-minded people as far as like our passion and stuff, but you still run in and have these conversations about family and,
yeah.
and all that. And so that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to bring that back alive. But without going too deep in down that hole, I kind of want to come back to some of the things you were talking about. As far as like getting yourself into shooting a bow and so what was the first bow that you ever owned?
The first bow that I was, so the very first bow was, an XI Omega, I think is yeah. what it was. I just actually nice. Had to look at it.
Yeah.
It's still in my mom's basement, because my dad kept it and my nephew, carp fished with it for a short period of time.
Yeah, I love that.
But it was an XI Omega. I don't know what XI turned into. I don't know if, you know, there's so many, you know, dissolving and purchasing mm-hmm. and shuffling of yeah. companies. But that was bought when I was a kid at Archery Country in Wake Park. My dad bought it for me.
Nice.
But then my first grown-up bow that I will say was the Matthews Switchback.
Yeah.
And that was one that my dad bought me, because like I said, my birthday is right around the hunting time.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like July, August, dad would be like, well, you know, what do we got to do for bow hunting this year? What do we got to do? And so yeah. anyhow, he's like, let's go check out the shop.
Mm-hmm.
Walked in there. I'm like, yeah, these are really nice. And everybody was talking about the solo cams.
Yeah.
So the Matthews Switchback had just came out and my dad was reading up on these. So everything was solo cam at that time.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
So he had bought me a Switchback, and I'm sure it was just to live vicariously through me. He wanted me to have the better bow, because then he took my XI, and that was his his bow and this and that, whatever. But so I, you know, greatly appreciate that he did that. But that was my first big boy bow, and I shot the heck out of that bow.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I probably should never have sold it in hindsight now as like that historical marker bow. But that's where I got, I would say that I got to the next level of shooting a bow was when I bought that one.
Yeah, the Switchback is probably the one bow that will forever continue to hold its value at somewhere around like the $400 to $450 mark.
Yes.
I've never seen one cheaper.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that bow has got to be 20 years old now.
Oh, it is. Yeah, because it was 2003 to 2005, somewhere in there that they released that, and then the Switchback XT.
Yep.
I just put new Vapor Trail strings on a buddy's Switchback XT that he still has to this day.
Yeah.
And he's like, I just really love this bow. I don't wanna, it's the same buddy that got me into coaching 4-H actually.
Yeah.
He's like, I just love this bow so much. I just can't seem to get rid of it. I'd love to get a newer bow.
Yeah.
But I just love it so much. I'm like, you know what? Hold on to it. Because that's the one bow that, like you said, it always holds that value of like $400 to $450. And you can't find a 20-year-old bow that has that. It's because everybody loved it so much.
Yeah, and if it was a there was ever a bow that you maybe wanted to hand down to somebody or something like that, or get somebody that like you would really want to get them hooked, you know, the technology has come a long way since then, but it's relatively speaking, the difference between your XI and that Switchback is a world of difference.
Yes.
So like, you know, it definitely could be a super, you know, a hot rod that you'd be giving to somebody to get into the sport. And then, so speaking of that, I wanted to talk a little bit about you know, the joy that it seems, I see your eyes kind of light up when you're talking about coaching and seeing them, you know, work their way through the program. I was just talking to a buddy of mine the other day, and he was saying that his kids are going through 4-H, and I had the same thought in my head, and I looked at my wife, and we were both just kind of like, okay. But then I didn't realize they embraced the shooting sports so much.
Yeah.
So I just learned about that only a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man, we really got to look into that. And then, so my daughter, she's only 4, but she's really shown a liking to it. She's at that point right now where she's trying to decide if whether Disney is like full of shit or,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Because, and I always tell my wife, I'm like, I want to be careful with her watching these shows because they glorify so much of what's going on and it's not reality.
Yep.
And again, and then she looks at me, she's like, she's 4. I'm like, I know, but I just,
she's impressionable.
Yes. I just want to, you know, and so now we're starting to have these conversations where, you know, she keeps telling me she wants to go hunt a moose. And I'm like, well, what does that mean to you?
Yeah,
like hunting, what does that mean? Because we hunt for mushrooms in the spring, you know, we hunt for shed antlers. So what does hunting mean to you? And she knew, I was actually kind of surprised. She was like, well, that means that we dyed the moose. That's how she said.
Yep. Yeah. That's adorable.
But I'm like, okay, so you get that, right? So, and it's not something, it's not for everybody. It's not something that you have to do, but I just want you to know that it is a reality. It is something that happens, something that has to happen.
Yep. You watch the beating heart fade away.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's hard for anybody. I don't care who you are. And as a 4-year-old, I feel like they're so protected. The kids are so protected from that.
Right.
And it's not easy to prepare somebody for that. Like, you introduce all these different life events to your kids, and you want to do it in the right way, the way that aligns with your beliefs, right? So, the taking of a life is hard when they have to watch it. Like, I think about last week, one of my neighbors passed away. She fought a battle with cancer.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
And she got like 3.5 more years than the doctors originally said. She lived life to the fullest. Great, great lady. We loved her dearly. My kids called her grandma, even though she wasn't a grandma. So they watched her, you know, and she got sick and this and that, but that happens in the privacy of your own home. Right. And then what's the next life event? You go to a funeral, kids introduced to that. Right. But that's a human being that you connect to. And now you go and you explain, you know, and I'm a person of faith. So you explain faith. and Grandma Barb was a faith believer, so she's in heaven, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we can relate all that. When you go to church, you learn about it and everything. Mm-hmm. Now you go sit in a deer stand, and you learn about God's creatures, and you learn about all this stuff.
Yeah.
And you learn about how life is precious, and you teach your kids that, because it is important in the human story.
Yeah.
But now come with me to go hunting and watch me kill this thing. Mm-hmm. It's so conflicting, right?
Yeah.
So how do you teach the beauty of it without contradicting what they're seeing in the Disney movies and that kind of thing too? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say it's beautiful like I'm some psychopath. I love to watch things die. I mean, I don't. Because like you said, shooting the rabbit in your backyard,
yeah,
it's traumatizing.
Yeah.
Like it really is. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy for kids to kind of comprehend all that, I don't think.
Right.
Just because you think about firsts for everything. Your first time riding a bike, your first time going on a date, your first proms, you know, whatever all these different firsts are you think about. Mm-hmm. I can remember the first deer that I shot and thinking to myself the same thing that you're describing with the rabbit. Like, there's a lot of blood. You know, this thing, its eyes are still open.
Yeah.
Why is its tongue hanging out? Like all mm-hmm. these non-glorious things. I know what the byproduct of it is going to be. My freezer's got meat in it.
Right.
But I remember the firsts, and I guarantee I took my daughter hunting 2 years ago now. And I've recently transitioned into saddle hunting. Mm-hmm. So I bring her with, and I put her on the opposite side of the tree from me. So my platform's on one side, and then I put a regular platform stand, harness her up, and she's on the other side of the tree from
me. Okay.
And we shot a doe. It was perfect. She saw the deer coming in. She was all amped and excited, and mm-hmm. she was 10 at the time. And so she was just watching, hanging out with Dad. And we shot the doe. She saw the arrow hit, like she was very attentive to it. Mm-hmm. And we waited 20 minutes in the tree stand, 30 minutes in the tree stand or so, packing a few things up, slow, quiet, you know, trying to do all the things that you should do that you learn as an archer. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes shots are marginal. Luckily, this wasn't a marginal shot, but I could see that gear turning with my daughter. And I tried to film it with my phone the best I could, because mm-hmm. I wanted to teach her, okay, we're zero. Let's blood trail. Let's do all this. We find the deer, and you can see that. And I've seen this with, you know, with myself and whatnot, and to see it firsthand, she walks up to the deer, and there's that 5 seconds of pause where she's just staring at it like, whoa, well, that's a dead animal. Like,
yeah.
We did that. Mm-hmm. Right. Even though she wasn't directly the one to shoot it and whatnot. But luckily that whole pattern, that whole process experience that she was able to be a part of, instilled something into her where she's like, I get it. I understand it now.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about your daughter wanting to experience that with a moose, I mean, I really hope you can do it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's not going to be it. That's not going to be an easy hunt by any means, but no. I hope you could do it.
Right.
I hope I could do it someday, but.
And it's funny because I was telling my wife that, you know, I was kind of excited. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, she said she wanted to go moose hunting. I'm like, I'm winning as a dad. Yes.
Yep.
And she was just like, well, what does she know or what, mm-hmm. what's her concept of that? Let's figure that out. Right.
Yeah.
And so again, so thank you. Big thank you to my wife for like making me yes. kind of reframe that and go, yeah, you're right. Probably should verify that that's what we're talking about. But nonetheless, you know, so she loves going out turkey hunting. And so I got to take her out one day, and she got to witness me miss a turkey at like 40 yards. Yep. and then every once in a while her and I will go out and shoot. And so she kind of, you know, she gives me the whole pep talk. Oh yeah, Dad, got to practice, you know, so you don't miss next time. You know,
oh, that's like, awesome. Oh. But what a good experience though, too. Yes. You got to always have like in all of life,
yeah.
not just hunting, you got to have the good and the bad.
Exactly. And she's seen, you know, a couple of the turkeys that I've taken. She hasn't seen a deer yet. Mm-hmm. I got a dry spell on deer lately. So she hasn't seen one. But Coda, our 12-year-old, he's not really into the outdoors a ton. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of repeating myself. I talked to Dan Johnson about this a little bit this morning too, but this also plays into this conversation that we're having where he, you know, I've taken him turkey hunting, not really his thing. He's just not really into like sitting mm-hmm. around.
Yep.
I took him grouse hunting once. We walked the trails and he had a blast. We didn't see a single grouse, but he had a ton of fun.
we got to the end of the trail. He got to shoot the shotgun for the first time.
And how old is he?
He'll be 13 this week.
Fantastic.
Now, when I first started taking him out, he was like 8 or 9, something like that. Mm-hmm. But just really hasn't, that really hasn't been his path, you know? And, and again, so I'm not going to push something on, you know what I mean? If it's not something you don't want to do. And he really loves basketball, and so he's super into that now. But the other day, me and my daughter were just out in the backyard, and I was shooting the BB gun at some cans.
Yeah. Yep.
And he came home, and he was like, oh, hey, can I try it? And I was like, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So I kind of showed him how to do it, you know, and we were going over the, you know, some of the basic safety rules, you know, always make sure it's pointed in the right direction, make sure the safety's on every time you shoot, all that stuff. And so we're going down the checklist and everything, and then he proceeds to shoot that thing like 300 times. I mean, went through an entire can of pellets, you know. Yeah. And so now he's just like, hey, can we shoot again? Can we shoot again? So he really wants to shoot. Whether he's going to hunt or not, I don't know. But again, I just like the fact that he's embracing that, and it's getting him outside, because that's the other thing too. He's just like not into mosquitoes, and you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, and I'm like, what, really? Like, you know, you and I, it's hard for us to kind of understand that. Like, don't get me wrong, mosquitoes suck.
Yes. But we were at that age at one point.
Right.
Nobody wants to, as a kid, you don't want to be out there swatting mosquitoes and then getting yelled at for moving around.
Yeah, exactly. Noise. Exactly. Yeah. But it's just, you know, and he hasn't had a ton of like really outdoor, like major outdoor excursions. And some of the ones that he has had have been pretty miserable, admittedly. So I can understand why he shies away from it a little bit. But again, just loving the teaching is, I guess, where I'm going with this whole thing, is the coaching and all that kind of stuff. And even though I don't know that I'll ever be in an official type role like where you are, I love being able to teach people. Yeah, and even like this podcast is a great example too, where just, I don't know everything, you know, and I challenge people to question me.
Yeah.
And nobody ever does, but maybe that's because nobody listens. I don't know. but I'm just like, hey, I want to, this is how I learn. You know, this is how we all learn.
Yep.
And there's always like, I learn something new every day especially when it comes to archery. There's always new technologies coming out, always new concepts, you know. And I remember the first time I had a customer call me on the phone, and you know, I always try to teach people, like, if you don't know something, don't BS them, right? Like, like just say, hey, I don't know, let me find out, or, you know, whatever. And this is one of those situations where I did not heed that advice, but I had a guy call me and say something about asking which direction we twist our strings in. And this was, this is 10 years ago or more, something like that.
Before people really cared.
Right. Kind of. And I was like, well, why do you need to know? Cause, and he was like, well, because I want to know how I should fletch my arrows. And I was like, the twist of your string has no bearing on that whatsoever. And I was sticking to my guns. I'm like, it does not. It does not. And then he's like, well, Levi Morgan just put out a video on YouTube and says this and that and this and that. And I'm like, So here I got my foot in my mouth.
Yep.
And I go to YouTube and watch this video. And I'm still skeptical, but then I tested it for myself. And
first thing you came do, go to the range. Yep. Let's go find out.
Yep. Came to discover that my arrows were clocking in a very specific direction, twisted the other way, even though our machines don't twist. They only twist one way.
Yeah.
And it's the way most manufacturers twist. Mm-hmm. But I built up a set the other way, and I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
You know, and again, so that's one of those things where, does it really matter? I mean, it can, it, you know, it depends, you know, if you're a target shooter and it's the difference between a line and not a line.
Yep.
Totally get that.
Yeah.
Totally understand that, you know, but when I have a guy,
efficiency is the big part of it, right?
Right.
Because the end result is you're going to have either a good hit or a bad miss on the target. Like you said, catching an X, but it's the efficiency. Where can I get the most efficiency out of my gear, whether it's hunting or target?
Right.
You want that efficiency. Mm-hmm. So like those videos call out. You slow-mo video it, and you see, is it fighting the natural rotation of the arrow, and then it corrects back to where it's going left or right rotation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stuff that I don't think they were looking at 10-plus years ago.
Like, no.
There's such a deep dive people are taking now.
Yeah, it's wild. And it's cool. I love it. I
so
love
I.
all of it. I love, you know, and I can understand where some people just, they're like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I would say a majority of archers don't need to get too deep down that hole, you know what I mean, as far as like what a lot of people would call a super tune or whatever, you know, but if you're going to do some Western hunting, you want to be shooting long distance, or like you said, if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to shoot a dime at 20, I totally get it. And it's crazy how we've been able to narrow these things down, like to, you know, just to almost the molecular level.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And the importance of that, you know, that I would say is really the fact that if you have a question on the way that your bow is performing, because if you go through the origin type stories, like you and I, you just start shooting and then you're like, man, why do I suck here? Or, you know, whatever's, what happens here? Why am I not performing well here? Why do I see this whip in my arrow? Whatever it might be, you're going to always question it and be like, well, how can I be better? Right. Mm-hmm. If you're that type of person, which I am, and a lot of people, I think, that shoot any shooting sports, but specifically archery, because there's so many facets to it. They have to go to somebody that knows the answer to it. So that's where, like you're saying with this experience, somebody calls and you go out and test it. Now you know that it's in your memory bank. You're now the source of truth for being able to say, and in my experience, this is what I saw.
Right.
And that's firsthand experience that you don't get on Archery Talk or a Facebook group or whatever, because it's just a guy that maybe is like, no, I watched a YouTube video. And I mean, God bless the University of YouTube, because everybody can learn a lot from there. But
I'm glad you said but.
There's a, that's kind of open-ended, because it, but is where it ends. People,
you gotta be careful,
can have too much.
Yeah.
And it's not everybody wants to learn from experience, and not everybody wants to teach from experience. And
exactly
right. So they want to go into the realm of, well, I read about this and I learned about this and a guy told me this, has to be the truth.
Yeah. Just regurgitation of other information without experiencing it. Like you're
saying. And that can be so dangerous in archery.
Yeah. Yep.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so yeah, not to discredit, there's a lot of great, people out there on YouTube giving out a lot of great information, and there's, you know, certain things that, you know, methods that I like to use that work great. And there's other methods that maybe I don't 100% disagree with, but ultimately in the end, or that I don't necessarily agree with is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But in the end, if it has the same result, right, whether it be success in your shooting or hunting or whatever it may be, great. You know, that's, and so you can't, I don't often discredit something completely, you know?
Me too. Trust, but verify. On all things in life, all aspects in life.
Right. And if I can't verify it, or if you can't get the experience of it, then you just, I believe it, you know? But going back to the coaching thing, let's talk a little bit more about the collegiate program. How we talked a little about that outside here, and I wish I had been recording, but talk a little bit about how that works.
Yeah. So this is something that in the last 2 years I've learned a massive amount about, and I still don't know all of it. Like, I still have to lean on people like Linda Beck and Rob or Paul and Jason at Archery Performance Academy, because we know the competition side of it, right? You go to a competition, you shoot, you have to do really well, maybe a podium, right? Collegiate's a little bit different. And it's because there's some rules in it that they have a purpose. But like, yes, we were talking a little bit earlier. So at the college, I knew that we were going to start with a smaller team, mainly because it's new. You can't, in central Minnesota, at a college that's predominantly a two-year college, we can't expect to have 30 people on a team and have this giant team where we've got to have 10 coaches and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
If we did have that, then yes, we could have a big, full collegiate USA archery team. And the reason being is on the USA archery side, they have multiple disciplines. They've got your recurve, Olympic recurve, like you would see in the Olympics. You've got bare bow. You have fixed pin, which is what we would consider a bow hunter class. You go shoot a 3D shoot in a bow hunter class, 12-inch stabilizer, no magnification in the lens, et cetera. And then they have compound. Compound's going to be your 30-inch stabilizers, your 8X magnification. You basically have a scope on your bow because you've got magnification. And that's where you've got that real high-end equipment.
Yeah.
So now you've got these major classes, and what they want with USA Archery is a male and a female team for each one of those divisions. Mm-hmm. And you got to have three archers per. I don't remember exactly what it is. I have to look it up again to see what the minimum is to make it a team.
Sure.
But USA Archery requires some depth to your team because of that. Mm-hmm. So now you're looking at, you know, a two dozen archers. So we knew at the college that we wouldn't be able to offer a team that can compete against Sawyer Sullivan at Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Or even like Cole Zwig when he was at Cumberland's and Isaac Sullivan at Cumberland's. Mm-hmm. They're on these gigantic archery teams.
Right.
But maybe we can build to that.
Sure.
So that's what we're really hoping to do. And it's going to be hard on a two-year team because you see some of these coaches in the collegiate world, whether it's Cumberland's, Union, Texas A&M, some of these big colleges that have giant teams. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're recruiting somebody out of high school to go to college there, giving them scholarships, just like they would in any other sport.
Sure.
But they're recruiting, let's say you get a young archer that's really proficient in the open class, used to shooting a 30-inch stabilizer with lenses and everything. Mm-hmm. They're very good. They've won state titles. They've won, you know, maybe nationals, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But what a college will do is it'll recruit them and say, well, we already have a compound. Because we've had somebody that we recruited 3 years ago, 2 years ago, whatever, and they're on our compound team.
Sure.
That team's full. We don't need a starting varsity compound team anymore.
Right, okay.
So now they're going to recruit that compound archer that shot a full competition setup, and they're going to say, but would you consider shooting fixed pin for us? Mm. You know, change your equipment a little bit, get rid of the magnification, put a shorter stabilizer on there, retrain yourself to shoot a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that happened at one of the big colleges for the collegiate, one of the collegiate championships. They actually had to take one of their recurve archers, I believe is what it was, and place them on the barebow side so that they could fit the team and be able to compete as a varsity team. And they were able to then go on and win the national title. But it's because you have to shuffle these people around on slots, okay, right? So there's some technicalities to it.
Yeah.
And it makes it a little bit challenging. And being in a two-year school, I know that's going to be really hard to create. That's going to be identical to that.
Right.
But we'll do everything we can to build up high caliber archers. And we'll do everything we can with USA Archery because of it.
Yeah.
But we're also kind of breaking the mold a little bit where we are, we're also doing NFAA events because they started to offer collegiate as well. Mm-hmm. So Bruce Call over at the NFAA and their team realized, well, let's start doing some of the tweeners, you know, between the kids and the adults. Let's put a collegiate division in there. And thank God they did, because now there's another layer and far more events that we could travel to that would allow our archers to get, whether it's a scholarship or a medal prize, whatever it might be, they now have another layer and it gives us more opportunity because we've got Yankton just down the road.
Yeah.
And they've got, I would say NFAA has more opportunity for shoots in different areas on top of USA Archery.
Sure.
So it gave us more variety. So we, right away in year one, we started doing that. We started going to NFAA events and USA Archery events.
Okay.
And the athletes loved it. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different at the college. So I'm not trying to be sales pitchy, but if you're an archer and you want to join a team, look me up at the college, Alexandria College. They did fantastic. Mm-hmm. They were very nimble with it. When I say they, I mean the athletes, and we were able to hit some events this first year and now for year two for event scheduling, it's been fantastic. Like some of the flexibility we get now where we don't have to do 4 days travel or 5 days travel for an event. Mm-hmm. It just makes it a lot easier to be able to go to Fargo or into North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa. We can stay a little bit more regional, but we can also then do some of the USA Archery national shoots and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's the collegiate side of things is just a little bit different.
Yeah.
That's all. Because if you and I wanted to shoot a tournament, we could just say, all right, let's go shoot the MSAA state indoor shoot.
Yeah.
And they move from place to place throughout Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Same with some USA Archery. We could shoot a USA Archery event. We just have to go there and do it. Well, with the collegiate side, the opportunity has to be there and it has to be offered as a collegiate shoot to be able to provide prize winnings or scholarships, medals, things like that. So,
can they go? Can they shoot the NFAA events outside of the collegiate program?
They sure can. Yeah, and we would definitely, you know, we want our Jersey archers to go and shoot whatever events they want.
Okay.
Because yes, now they can get a scholarship, but the scholarship prize winnings may not be as big as a regular NFAA. Sure. Prize winning. So if we have a real high caliber archer, we'd almost be doing a disservice. I mean, they could win the scholarship, but their scholarship, maybe it's a $500 scholarship opposed to prize winnings if they got first place because they beat Bodie.
Yeah.
Which, man, if I could coach somebody to beat Bodie, holy crap.
Yeah, you'd be a champion. Yeah, for absolutely. Sure.
But if they go beat Bodie, why wouldn't they shoot for $10,000 instead of $500?
Yeah.
And they can do it because we're not like an NIL level of team like what they have with basketball and football and things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I would have known about that. I'm still paying off student loans this very day, man. Maybe if I could have earned some of those scholarships back when I was
gosh, I know.
And just flinging arrows in my backyard for fun. Could have been actually making some money.
Everybody I meet's like, oh, I wish they would have had that when I was younger. And I'm like, yeah. Well, we're 30 cool. now. So make sure that if you've got kids that are interested in it, look at the 4-H level, look at the collegiate level, and even just USA archery programs like Archery Performance Academy has. If you can get in a JOAD team, that kind of thing, it's really, really, really big for the mental discipline. As you know, anybody that's ever shot a bow, either it's competitively or for bow hunting, it's the solitude, it's the martial art of it, as my buddy Tyler loves it when I call it that.
Mm-hmm. You know, your buddy Tyler, is that Tyler Notch you're talking about?
Yes, that's Tyler Notch.
He's due for an episode here too.
Yeah, I thought about inviting him, but it's like, you know what? I'm going to take the stage here. Stop making me stand in your shadow, Tyler. No, I'm just kidding.
It gets hard. It gets hard when you get too many people. Three is good. Four is too many.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk... Man, honestly, I wish we had more time because I've got so much more that I want to talk about. And so we're going to have a part two, honestly, because we won't be able to touch on everything because I'm just going down all these different trains, right? And I'm like,
I talk a lot.
No, you're fine. No, this is perfect. This is exactly the way that I want this to go.
Yeah.
And so I love these conversations where I'm learning stuff because, again, now I'm going, okay, I think I need to take my daughter shooting a bow more seriously.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Because that's a path, you know, that she could go or could maybe want to take. I mean, there's all kinds of different things. She's loves skateboarding. She's definitely got the hyper hobbied stuff that she got that from me too. But, you know, just trying to help her narrow down what she's doing. And I think it's really cool what you're doing as far as like helping these students out, teaching them the ropes on how the equipment works and how to, you know, fix things or, you know, if they're running into some issues. I saw you guys attended the Rushmore Rumble. Mm-hmm. Were you there this past year?
Yep. Yep.
So are you going to now go to the Rushmore Rumble that is now going to be in Indianapolis?
Yeah. I really hope to, because that is a really fun shoot and it's a great NFAA shoot. We did it last year. All of the archers loved it. Mainly because now that was their first experience with rubbing elbows with pros.
Yeah.
Right. Like Louis Holmes shot next to one of our archers.
Yeah.
And our archer was so nervous going into it. It was his first big tournament. And I'm like, dude, you're next to Louis Holmes. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a Greek guy.
Yeah.
He's
totally is.
Yeah. He's
a lot not of levity. Intimidating at all. No, not at all. Exactly. And he's jovial. He's joking about stuff.
Yeah.
And then Jeff Rainey was a couple down from him. He shoots a lot of 3D and indoor. And Jeff is all about hunting. Like, you can really wind him up talking about hunting.
Mm-hmm.
So even just as a joke, so I'm trying to get Jake to calm down a little bit, this and that. And he's nervous and he's fidgeting, you know, like, I'm guilty of that too.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it's nerve-wracking, man.
Yeah, exactly. And I know he loves the carp fish. So, or go bow fishing for carp.
Yeah.
So I said something just totally off the cuff. I'm like, Jake, why would you say, and I said it loud and boisterous, right?
Mm-hmm.
As he's out on the line getting ready to shoot, I'm like, Jake, why would you say that bow fishing for carp sucks? And I just see Jeff Rainey, what? What? Dude, bow fishing is awesome. And so, like, right away, then he's talking to Jake and Louie's joking around. And so you could just see him you know, that mental anguish kind of melted away a little bit. And so it was great to have that experience with the Rushmore Rumble.
Yeah.
And now that they pivoted and moved it to Indy,
I've
always wanted to go to ATA.
Yeah.
Just because I'm such a gear nut. And
yeah.
I mean, I love the industry and so forth. So yeah, maybe. I'm not 100% certain, but Tyler and I have been talking about it. It is on the schedule because we did it last year. So we have it on the schedule. We want to do Rushmore Rumble. But now that it's an indie, we got to just check the budget because it's a little bit different than, you know, just the drive to Yankton, which takes 5 hours for us opposed to now going to Indy. But I really hope to. We are going to do the 3D, the USA Archery 3D Collegiate Championship that is down in Foley in October. That was one we wanted to do last year. We're like, all right, we're putting this on the schedule for budgetary standpoints. We want to make sure we plan for it. We just couldn't make it happen. We had to pull out of it. We were about 6 weeks into it by time that shoot started last year. And we just had so much that we had to cover, right? We just didn't have an established team to say, even if I wanted to take three or four, there was really good proficient shooters, but we were still fine tuning, like getting them into a big boy rest and big boy arrows, you know, fat arrows and, you know, better sight. And some people needed a bow upgrade. So that was just too much to shuffle into it.
Sure.
But we are going to do that this year in October.
Cool.
And then I would love to do the Rushmore Rumble. We talked about Vegas because now again with NFAA, and that's the Super Bowl of tournament archery and then outdoor 50 meter tournaments and outdoor shoots and that kind of thing. Yeah. We're looking to get all those checked off the list for this year.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was thinking about, I think the move, I mean, again, so unfortunately for people who are local, like it's kind of a bummer because now they have to travel. But I was even talking to Hollywood. We had a meeting the other day and I was like, hey, I'm like, you're going to get, I'm like, we should shoot it. You know, I'm like, we should shoot it. I don't do a lot of that type of shooting. And then I was like, oh, but wait a minute. Is it a three spot or is it a five spot or what's the deal? And then I think he, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he said it's a five spot qualifier.
Yep.
And then you shoot a Vegas round.
It's both.
Yeah.
So they have a five spot, 600 round and a three spot 300 round.
Okay.
So what they do is they have, it's basically, it's a five spot Vegas face. So you think about the Vegas face, it's it's the triangle. Three targets that you're shooting at, and you've got your 10 ring on each. A typical five spot NFAA, the blue white face that everybody always has hanging up in a shop, you know, that's 5 points per target face. So what they do now is they just doubled it. They gave you the same size X ring that's on the Vegas face, and you're shooting five arrows. That's what the first day is.
Got it.
And that's, I think that's like an exclusive target shoot to the Rushmore Rumble. They, NFAA created that. So now you're shooting for a 600 is what you want to, you know, attain on that one. Cause you're still shooting your five arrows like you would on a normal five spot, but it's 10 points per.
Got it. Okay.
So
that makes sense. And so, but it, like we talked about before, you know, 3D is more my thing and shooting paper. Like it doesn't quite, the repetition of that doesn't appeal to me as much, but still I'm like, if it's going to, if it's there, we're already going to be there.
Yeah,
you know, and anything that will force us to shoot, I keep, I tell so many people, or I have so many people tell me, like, you know, shooting spots will definitely make you a better shooter, no matter which way, what you're thinking or what anybody tells you.
Yep.
And of course, I can't disagree with that. Anytime you shoot more, you're going to, you know, it's always going to be better, but there's just different aspects of the way that you shoot and, and learning how to really, you know, aim small, miss small kind of a deal.
Oh, it totally does.
And so definitely something I want to get into, but it'd be really cool to see you guys out there if you can make it. And if you, of course, I, you know, I know we've talked about this a little bit briefly and I apologize because now that we've had the conversation, we've got a little bit deeper. I'm like, man, I feel like we need to do something about this. So and I think we've helped you out a little bit in the past, but anything you need, just holler at me, let me know. We'd love to be a part of it. And of course, you know, hopefully this reaches some people that are like, hey, yeah, that sounds really cool. Something that I'd like to do. Maybe it'll get you a couple of new shooters or, you know, maybe get some people to want to get their kids or even the kids themselves, take themselves into that direction at some point for the future. So hopefully this can do some of that and we'll talk about it a little bit more, but, real quick before we end, we do just need to talk a little bit about one of your bows?
Yeah, because I'm a weird guy. I brought two of them here. I've got one that I hung on the wall here.
I got the Hoyt. Was that an AX2?
So this is the RX-8.
Oh.
I kept the RX-8 from carbon. Last year. Yep.
Yeah.
It's carbon. So that's my hunting bow. I've got both Hoyt bows. So I've got the Concept X 37 is my target bow. And I've got it decked out in college colors. So we're black, red, and white is our kind of our mascot colors,
right.
Our college colors. Mm-hmm. So I have it decked out with that. And then I've got the RX-8 for hunting. So yeah. And I've got a proof on there for that.
World's second best arrow rest.
Yeah, I like the Hamskis, but I really am interested in the Victor. I totally am. Like,
I just have to give you a hard time.
When I saw that come out, I don't know. I've got some qualms with the Hamsky. I was really weird. I liked the spring. Mm-hmm. Everybody hated it because it's a fail point and this and that. Like on my target bow, I still have the spring. But I liked it because it gave me a little bit more dynamic ability with the tuning of that.
Yeah.
I don't like the damper. I would much rather have, so I've had the Pro V, I've had the Vapor Trail rest and specifically on my hunting bows and whatnot when I was really turning into serious archery. And I loved them, but, the Hamskis were so easy to get.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, they're solid.
But they do good.
I'm going to be working on getting a Victor in at some point.
Especially
on my hunting bow.
Yeah.
I really want it on my hunting bow, and then I'm going to try it on a target bow as well. So I will
prove
that to you that if it isn't me directly, I know some of the archers on our team too, that they're always looking for a better rest. So we'll definitely be.
Yeah, for sure.
That, so.
You know, a little BTS story about the spring on the Hamsky. Maybe you already know this, but maybe some of our listeners don't know. Mm-hmm. But a gentleman by the name of Tim Gillingham, he used to shoot our original Pro when we first launched it.
Yep.
And he was on staff with us. And he had this idea with the spring. Mm-hmm. And he kept telling Jared, he was like, I really think you need to think about putting this spring on there.
Yeah.
And Jared was just like, nah, I don't want, you know, he's like, I want to keep it simple. Mm-hmm. I don't want to overcomplicate it. I don't want to create a fail point.
Yeah.
And then Jared and Steve, I don't want to say like, you know, when you're a startup, you know, you have a concept, you have an idea, and then you look at what it costs to protect that idea.
Oh yeah.
And you're like, well, that's kind of out of the, you know what I mean? So they did a provisional patent on the limb driven technology, but it expired.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking, you know, thousands of dollars, right, to get an official patent and all kinds of time and everything going into lawyers and stuff. So they never officially got it patented. Mm-hmm. And then Tim and Andrew and Sean, or I don't know who all was involved in the very beginning, but so that's when they started Hamsky.
Yep.
Gillingham, Ham, and then.
Yep. Which, the name comes from their names.
Their names.
Directly. Yeah, that's all Hamsky. That's why it's, I don't know. It's so I see so many people are like, how do you say that? Hamskia?
Yeah.
What is it? Hamsky?
Right.
What is it? Yeah. And that's why I found that tidbit out too. And I was really interested by that. But
it's, we always joke about how we go about it in a way where we like the claim that we're the originators. We don't try to talk any smack or anything like that. But, and we take it as a compliment, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Because now you have
the way.
Two major technologies when it comes to arrow rest, cable-driven and limb-driven. And so we take pride in knowing that we started that.
Yep.
And either way, you know, we're in the market of understanding that may the best man win is kind of where we're at.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And so, and even we had, you know, Sean and Andrew came over at ATA and we were talking and, you know, and then, I didn't get a chance, but Hollywood and Rory went over and we're kind of chatting with them a little bit about some stuff and, you know, we're trying to stay civil about everything, you know, we're competition, but again, it's one of those things where it's like, may the best man win.
Yep.
And it always used to be that way. You know, Keith Dvorzniak over at Ripcord, we always got along with him really well. Just a great guy. He would always tell everybody, you know, Ripcord makes the best cable driven Vapor Trail makes the best limb driven. He would send people over our way, even though at some point they started their own, doing their own limb driven stuff. But nonetheless, you know, so much about relationships now, it's not quite the same. Things are a little bit more cutthroat, you know, so you're just 100%. So you have to stay a little bit more guarded, but, but either way, great guys over there, you know, and like I said, we take pride in knowing that, that they liked our technology and wanted to use it. So,
and they're, you know, it's, it, what the great part about it is it gives the options, right? Nobody wants to have a monopoly on one thing. It's great to have patents on things,
right?
Because now it's a profit generator.
Mm-hmm.
But to just be able to have the options is what's really important, especially for me. Like when I go to my archers, I mean, you think about how many arrows are on the market, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I don't want to compare arrows to rests, but it's great to have options.
Yeah.
And I really loved, especially on my target rig, I always had the Micro Elite for the longest time. And I don't remember what happened, why I ever moved away from that. I don't remember, but I've always loved limb driven and I've always had Vapor Trail up until Hamsky is what I threw on here now. So,
yeah, I mean, and again, so I'm just,
don't hate him.
I just got to bust you on your balls a little bit on that one, but only because I get it. You know, it's one of those things. Like right now I have three different bino harnesses.
Yeah.
And it's because I have these binos that I really like, but I can't find a harness that will work with them the way I want it to.
Yep.
You know, like I'm like, okay, the Mystery Ranch one, I like that. I like how the flap moves and the way it goes, but my binoculars will only fit in there if I recess the cups on it. And then that's a pain in the butt every single time. And I don't want to,
you're taking it back out.
So again, not everything is compatible with everything. And that's why you need to have options. And, and I totally understand that. So I don't, again, it's, to me, it's may the best man win. And I, and we know that the market share is going to bounce back and forth depending on who's got the latest technology or who comes out with the newest thing. And so it, it forces, innovation. It's
totally
just,
does.
It's just what it is. Yep. This Victor, you know, we probably would not have come up with this concept and this idea. It is very, admittedly, it is very much along the lines of kind of, you know, we've taken some ideas from Hamsky, but mostly because when we're asking our customers, why would you shoot that rest over ours? And then they say, well, cause it has this and this. And so it's like, okay, well, if we had that, then would you, and they're like, yeah. So of course, you know, there's part of that, but we also want to have our own spin and have our own technologies, you know, put into it. And so, like I said, if force the ingenuity, as much as I didn't like the IMS system in the very beginning, I thought it was just going to die. I didn't think it would last.
I agree.
And really it's ultimately, it's now replacing the burger hole.
Yep.
And it's is actually pretty slick.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Mounting a rest is super fast, super easy. It automatically squares it up to the bow. It's pretty rock solid. And again, force the innovation. Yep. We couldn't use it at first. We reached out to Q80 and said, hey, we want in because our rest would no longer fit on their bows.
Yep.
And speaking of monopolies.
Yeah. Like that's the ugly side of it, in my opinion, in the industry as a consumer, right? As a consumer, I hate it because maybe I really, really want to get a new Vapor Trail rest and I want that sucker mounted on the bow because the inline concept does make sense.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're now moving the weight attachment from a half inch over to the side, but that's going to change your bias. Same with like the proof. I've got the dovetail proof.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be able to throw the pick mount dovetail directly on the center of the riser.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with your rest. And in a hunting bow, why not do it?
Right.
Absolutely. You can't deny it.
Right.
But you get somebody like QAD, they own the patent on it. And you're like, well, only the rest we say you can put on there. And it's like, dang it, you guys. That hurts us as consumers far more than it hurts the companies themselves. I mean, yes, you pay a royalty or whatever it is to use it.
Yeah.
I think that sucks for people. I mean, it's like the tariff conversation. It's there's costs that get passed on to you and now your costs change because of it.
Mm-hmm. And my hat's off to, you know, and again, so we have a good relationship with QAD too. We have to, cause we can't use the technology without that. But the point is even though Matthews was offering the burger mount, the design change of the roller guard pushed us out.
Yep.
And so then, but again, did it cause some problems with us for us for a little while? Of course it did. And then, so it made us, we were forced to innovate. And then once they opened it up, then it was like, okay, boom, we jumped on it immediately. We already had a design pretty much in the bag ready to go. It was just a matter of when can we get that licensing agreement signed so we can move forward. And then,
again, then eventually led to the, because our original design of the Victor was not IMS. It was a burger button arrow rest. And I mean, that Victor design has been in, I mean, it's the better part of 6 or 7 years now that we've been trying to get. Every time we would get it to a certain point, a technology would change. And now we're like, oh, shoot. And even then,
pivot.
Even then, now the Victor should fit on almost every bow, but there's one that it will not fit on.
One's got a fat riser or a and cable guard.
I'm guessing you can't imagine who makes it. It's the Matthews Lift RS.
Yeah.
It will not fit.
Just the RS.
Just the RS.
Cable guard?
Yep.
Yeah. Dang it.
So, and, but it's funny because we have some dealers that are actually, and even Wayne Endicott at the Bull Rack did a video too, because the Hansky rests don't fit on that bow.
Yeah.
The QAD is the only thing that fits.
Yep.
And so he took a file and filed the rest down to get it on.
No kidding.
And I was just like, holy cow, this guy is losing his mind, man.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But
no, good for him, though, because that, you know, and to make that public, hopefully that'll make Matthews look at it and say, all right, let's make a whatever tweak we have to on the next version of the short draw bow.
Yeah.
So that it's more compatible with whatever the consumer wants.
Yep.
Because it's a pay-to-play industry. And if you want the Victor, and the Victor is going to perform, because you get 70% coverage with the arrow still. Mm-hmm. You get 70% support.
Yep.
So why wouldn't you want to be able to try that rest if it's going to work better than maybe they're coming from a spring Hamsky, or maybe they've got Pro-V, whatever it is.
Right.
I want the new latest greatest rest because this has been vetted out for 6 years. I want to be able to put that on my bow.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I have a Lift RS and you're slamming it in there and it's not working. And I'd be pissed.
Yeah. We've already started a redesign on our second iteration. And not so much because we need it to fit on an RS. We would like it to, but you know, it's just, by the time we get the technology figured out to fit on an RS, they're going to have a new bow. That's going to
be, exactly,
you know, so really what we want to do is, it's forcing the innovation of removing some material. How can we use some sort of nanotechnology to get everything we need into this smaller package?
Yep.
And there's never, you know, that's always a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, the big complaint is, you know, price point. But, you know, the biggest argument that we've been seeing out there with other consumers saying, well, here's the thing. You guys asked for the technology. They've delivered. And with that technology comes costs, you know, and licensing agreements and all that kind of stuff. So that all goes into it. But it hasn't stopped people from wanting it because we've sold plenty of them.
Oh, yeah.
And as of the airing of this episode, I know we've had production issues, and I will say this now. I'm looking at parts in this building right now as we speak. They've been counted. They're going to be assembled here over the course of the next week, and they will be shipping. Yeah. And so by the time this airs, they're probably already going to be hopefully moving within the next couple of days if they already haven't. So
yeah, and that's a testament to that. I see that here. There's a lot going on. There's definitely a lot of work getting done.
They'll
go out. I promise you, on behalf of Ricky, from never having seen the facility, I can see that there's a lot of buzz and a lot of things happening here. So that's that's fantastic. And I know Dial kind of went through the same thing, and it's hard to get things out the door and to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
So commend you guys for that. Cause obviously, I mean, we've seen it with strings. I have for a long time, and you see it with products that I don't want something rushed out the door just to meet a quota or to fill an order. I want to make sure it's done properly. And I'm always cheering for the Minnesota companies too. The 365 Vapor Trail, Dialed Now, anybody local that we can get. I'm all for it.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, we'll get you in here again. Again, just let me know the next time you can come down. It'd be great to have you on. I'd like to talk more, maybe a little bit on the hunting side of things and dive into some of that. You know, I appreciate you coming down here and talking to me today. I know it's a little bit of a drive for you, so it's awesome. I'm glad you're able to get down here and check out the facility. It's great conversation. I'm excited for the next one. And so thanks everybody for joining us once again. If you want to see the video version of this episode, you can check us out on the Vapor Trail YouTube channel. give us a like, subscribe, and hit that bell so you can be up to date on all things archery. And as of course, if you're listening, give us a rating and a review. Only 5 stars will do. And with that, Dan and I are going to pack up our bows and arrows, and we're hitting the range. Have a great day, everybody.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Vapor Trail is now offering an exclusive discount to the Range Podcast listeners. Enter promo code TRP15, that's TRP15, at checkout for 15% off VTX bowstrings and Vapor Trail and Stokerized branded t-shirts, hats, and other gear.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.